Chapter 10.
Quick now, come find me.
Moundshroud's voice, laughing, called them on.
This way.
No, this.
This.
They ran along the slender ribbon of mummy wrapping deep into the earth.
Yes, here I am.
They turned a corner and stopped, for the long linen ribbon wound across the tomb floor and up a wall to wrap around the feet of an ancient brown mummy which was propped a tilt in a candle-lit niche. Stuttered Ralph Bengstrom, dressed in his own mummy costume.
Is that a real mummy?
Yes.
Dust sifted from under the golden mask on the mummy's face.
Real.
Mr. Moundshroud, you...
The gold mask fell to clang like a bright bell on the floor. Where the mask had been was a mummy's face, a pool of brown mud crinkled by blasts of sun. One eye was glued shut with spiderweb. The other eye cracked forth tears of dust and a glint of bright blue glass.
"Is there some boy there dressed like a mummy?"
asked the voice, muffled beneath the shroud.
"Why, me, sir?"
squeaked Ralph, showing his arms, legs, chest, the medical bandages it had taken him all afternoon to wrap himself up in, mummified.
"Good,"
sighed Moundshroud. "Grab the linen strip. Pull." Ralph bent, took hold of the ancient mummy bandages, and yanked. The ribbon unraveled up around to reveal the great ancient reptile nosebeak and flaky chin and dry, smiling, dust-powdery mouth of Moundshroud. His crossed arms fell loose.
"Thanks, lad. Free. No fun being wrapped like some old funeral gift for the land of the dead, but
hist!
Quick, boys, hop in the niches. Stand stiff. Someone's coming. Play mummies, boys. Play dead."
The boys leaped to stand, arms folded, eyes shut, breaths held, like a frieze of small mummies cut in the ancient rock.
"Easy," whispered Moundshroud. "Here comes
a funeral procession. An army of mourners in gold and fine silks bearing small sailing ship toys and copper bowls of food in their hands. And in their midst, a mummy case carried light as sunshine on the shoulders of six men. And behind that, a fresh-wrapped mummy with new paintings on its linen vestments and a small gold mask fitted over the hidden face.
"See the food, boys. The toys,"
whispered Moundshroud.
"They put toys in the tombs, lads, so the gods will come play, romp, roust about, and run children happy to the land of the dead. See the boats, kites, jump ropes, toy knives."
"But look at the size of that mummy,"
said Ralph inside his hot linen bandages.
"It's a 12-year-old boy in there, like me, and that gold mask on the boy mummy's face. Doesn't it look familiar?"
"Pipkin!"
cried everyone hoarsely.
"Shh!"
hissed Moundshroud, for the funeral had stopped. The high priests were glancing around through the flickering torch shadows. The boys, high in their niches, squeezed their eyes tight, sucked in their breaths.
"Not a whisper,"
said Moundshroud, a mosquito in Tom's ear.
"Not a murmur."
The harp music began again. The funeral shuffled on. And in the midst of all the gold and toys, the kites of the dead, there was the small 12-year-old fresh new mummy with a gold mask that looked just exactly like Pipkin.
"No, no, 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 no," thought Tom.
"Yes,"
cried a mouse voice, tiny, lost, wrapped away, kept, trapped, wild.
"It's me. I'm here, under the mask, under the wrappings. Can't move, can't yell, can't fight free."
"Pipkin,"
thought Tom.
"Wait. Can't help it. Trapped,"
shouted the small, wee voice wrapped in picture linens.
"Follow, meet me, find me at..."
The voice faded, for the funeral procession had turned a corner in the dark labyrinth and was gone.
"Follow you where, Pipkin?"
Tom Skelton jumped down from his niche and yelled into the dark,
"Meet you where?"
But at that exact moment, Mound Shroud, like a chopped tree, fell out of his niche. Bang! He struck the floor.
"Wait," he cautioned Tom, looking up at him with one eye that looked like a spider caught in its own web. "We'll save old Pipkin yet. Sly does it. Slide and creep, boys. Sst."
They helped him up and unwound some of his mummy wrappings and tiptoed down the long corridor and turned the corner.
"Holy cow,"
whispered Tom.
"Look, they're putting Pipkin's mummy in the coffin and the coffin inside the...
"Sarcophagus," Mound Shroud supplied the jawcracker. "A coffin in a coffin in a coffin, lad, each larger than the last, all done up in hieroglyphs to tell his life story."
"Pipkin's life?"
said all. "Or whoever Pipkin was this time around, this year, 4,000 years ago."
"Yeah,"
whispered Ralph.
"Look at the pictures on the sides of the coffin. Pipkin 1 year old. Pipkin 5, Pipkin 10 and running fast, Pipkin up an apple tree, Pipkin pretending to drown in the lake, Pipkin eating his way through a peach orchard. Wait, what's that?"
Mound Shroud watched the busy funeral.
"They're putting furniture in the tomb for him to use in the land of the dead. Boats, kites, tops to spin, fresh fruits should Pipkin wake 100 years from now hungry."
"He'll be hungry, all right." "Good grief, look, they're going out. They're closing the tomb."
Mound Shroud had to grab and hold Tom, for he was jumping up and down in agony.
"Pipkin's still in there, buried. When do we save him?"
"Later. The long night is young. We'll see Pipkin again, never fear. Then..." The tomb door slammed shut.
The boys yammered and yelled. In the dark they could hear the scrape and slosh of mortar filling the last cracks and seams as the final stones were shoved in place. The mourners went away with their silent harps. Ralph stood in his mummy costume, stunned, watching the last shadows go.
"Is that why I'm dressed like a mummy?"
He fingered the bandages. He touched his clay-wrinkled ancient face.
"Is that what my part of Halloween is all about?"
"All, boy, all," murmured Mound Shroud. "The Egyptians, why, they built to last. 10,000 years they planned for. Tombs, boy, tombs. Graves, mummies, bones. Death, death. Death was at the very heart, gizzard, light, soul, and body of their life. Tombs and more tombs with secret passages, so none might be found, so grave robbers could not borrow souls and toys and gold. You are a mummy, boy, because that was how they dressed for eternity. Spun up in a cocoon of threads, they hoped to come forth like lovely butterflies in some far, dear, loving world. Know your cocoon, boy. Touch the strange stuffs."
"Why,"
said Ralph the mummy, blinking at the smoky walls and old hieroglyphs,
"every day was Halloween to them." "Every day,"
gasped all in admiration.
"Every day was Halloween for them, too."
Mound Shroud pointed. The boys turned. A kind of green electric storm simmered in the tomb dungeon. The ground shuddered as with an ancient earthquake. Somewhere, a volcano turned over in its sleep, lighting the walls with one fiery shoulder. And on the walls beyond were prehistoric drawings of cavemen long before the Egyptians.
"Now,"
said Mound Shroud. Lightning struck. Saber-toothed tigers caught the cavemen screaming. Tar pits drowned their bones. They sank wailing.
"Wait, let's save a few with fire."
Mound Shroud blinked. Lightning struck to burn forests. One ape man, running, seized a burning branch and rammed it in a saber-tooth's jaws. The tiger shrieked and fell away. The ape man, snorting in triumph, tossed the fiery branch into a pile of autumn leaves in his cave. Other men came to hold their hands out to the fire, laughing at the night where the yellow beast eyes waited, afraid.
See, boys.
Mound Shroud's face flickered with the fire. The days of the long cold are done. Because of this one brave, new-thinking man, summer lives in the winter cave.
But, said Tom, what's that got to do with Halloween?
Do? Why, blast my bones, everything. When you and your friends die every day, there's no time to think of death, is there? Only time to run.
But when you stop running at long last... He touched the walls. The ape men froze in mid-flight.
Now you have time to think of where you came from, where you're going. And fire lights the way, boys. Fire and lightning.
Morning stars to gaze at. Fire in your own cave to protect you. Only by night fires was the caveman, beast man, able at last to turn his thoughts on a spit and baste them with wonder. The sun died in the sky. Winter came on like a great white beast shaking its fur, burying him. Would spring ever come back to the world? Would the sun be reborn next year or stay murdered? Egyptians asked it. Caveman asked it a million years before. Will the sun rise tomorrow morning?
And that's how Halloween began?
With such long thoughts at night, boys, and always at the center of it, fire. The sun. The sun dying down the cold sky forever. How that must have scared early man, eh? That was the big death. If the sun went away forever, then what? So, in the middle of autumn, everything dying, ape-men turned in their sleep, remembered their own dead of the last year. Ghosts called in their heads. Memories, that's what ghosts are, but ape-men didn't know that. Behind their eyelids, late nights, the memory ghosts called, waved, danced. So ape-men woke up, tossed twigs on the fire, shivered, wept. They could drive away wolves, but not memories, not ghosts. So they held tight to their ribs, prayed for spring, watched the fire, thanked invisible gods for harvests of fruit and nuts. Halloween indeed. A million years ago in a cave in autumn with ghosts inside heads and the sun lost. Mound Shroud's voice faded. He unraveled another yard or two of mummy wrappings, draped them over his arm grandly, and said,
"More to see. Come on, boys."
And they walked out of the catacombs into the twilight of an old Egyptian day. A great pyramid lay before them, waiting.
"Last one to the top," said Mound Shroud, "is a monkey's uncle."
And the monkey's uncle was Tom.
Chapter 11. Gasping, they reached the pyramid's top, where waited a vast crystal lens, a viewing glass which spun slowly in the wind on a golden tripod, a gigantic eye with which to bring far places near. In the west, the sun, smothered and dying in clouds, sank. Mound Shroud hooted his delight. "There it goes, boys, the heart, soul, and flesh of Halloween, the sun.
There Osiris is murdered again. There sinks Mithras, the Persian fire. There falls Phoebus Apollo, all Grecian light. Sun and flame, boys, look and blink. Turn that crystal spyglass. Swing it down the Mediterranean coast 1,000 miles. See the Greek Isles?"
"Sure," said plain George Smith, dressed up as fancy pale ghost. "Cities, towns, streets, houses, people jumping out on porches to bring food."
"Yes," Mound Shroud beamed, "their festival of the dead. The feast of pots, trick or treat old style, but tricks from the dead if you don't feed them.
so treats are laid out in fine banquets on the sill. Far away, in the sweet dusk, smells of cooked meats steamed, dishes were dealt out for spirits that smoked across the land of the living. The women and children of the Grecian homes came and went with multitudinous quantities of spiced and delectable victuals. Then, all through the Grecian isles, doors slammed. The vast slamming echoed along the dark wind. "The temple's shutting tight," said Mount Shroud. "Every holy place in Greece will be double-locked this night."
"And look!"
Ralph, who was a mummy, swung the crystal lens. The light flared over the boys' masks.
"Those people, why are they painting black molasses on their front doorposts?"
"Pitch," corrected Mound Shroud. "Black tar to glue the ghosts, stick them fast so they can't get inside."
"Why," said Tom, "didn't we think of that?"
Darkness moved down the Mediterranean shores. From the tombs, like mist, the dead spirits wavered in soot and black plumes along the streets to be caught in the dark tar that smeared the porch sills. The wind mourned, as if telling the anguish of the trapped dead. "Now, Italy. Rome." Mound Shroud turned the lens to see Roman cemeteries where people placed food on graves and hurried off. The wind whipped Mound Shroud's cape. It hollowed his mouth. "Oh, autumn winds that bake and burn, and all the world to darkness turn, now storm and seize and make of me a swarm of leaves from autumn's tree." He kick-jumped straight up in the air. The boys yelled delight, even as his clothes, cape, hair, skin, body, corn-candy bones tore apart before their eyes. "Leaves. Burn. Change. Turn." The wind ribboned him to confetti. 1,000,000 autumn leaves, gold, brown, red as blood, rust, all wild, rustling, simmering, a clutch of oak and maple leaf, a hickory leaf downfall, a toss of flaking whisper, murmur, rustle to the dark River Creek sky. Not one kite, but 10,000,000 tiny mummy flake kites. Mound Shroud exploded apart. "World turn, leaves burn, grass die, trees fly." And from 1,000,000,000 other trees in autumn lands, leaves rushed to join with the upflung battalions of dry bits that were Mound Shroud dispersed in whirlwinds from which his voice stormed. "Boys, see the fires along the Mediterranean coast. Fires burning north through Europe, fires of fear. Flames of celebration. Would you spy, boys? Up now, fly!" And the leaves in avalanche fell upon each boy like terrible flapping moths and carried them away. Over Egyptian sands they sang and laughed and giggled. Over the strange sea, rapturous and hysterical, they soared.
"Happy New Year!" a voice cried far below.
"Happy what?"
asked Tom. "Happy New Year," Mound Shroud, a flock of rusty leaves, rustled his voice. "In old times, the 1st of November was New Year's Day, the true end of summer, the cold start of winter. Not exactly happy, but, well, Happy New Year." They crossed Europe and saw new water below.
"The British Isles," whispered Mound Shroud. "Would you cock an eye at England's own druid god of the dead?"
"We would!"
"Quiet as milkweed then, soft as snow, fall, blow away down, each and all."
The boys fell. Like a bushel of chestnuts, their feet rained to earth. Chapter 12. Now the boys who landed like a downpour of bright autumn trash were in this order. Tom Skelton, dressed up in his delicious bones. Henry Hank, more or less a witch. Ralph Bengstrom, an unraveled mummy becoming more unbandaged by the minute. A ghost named George Smith. J.J., no other name needed, a very fine ape man.
Wali Bab, who said he was a gargoyle, but everyone said he looked more like Quasimodo. Fred Fryer, what else but a beggar fresh out of a ditch. And last and not least, Hackles Nibley, who had run up a costume at the last moment by simply clapping on a white scare mask and grabbing his grandpa's harvest scythe off the garage wall. All the boys being safely landed on English earth, their billion autumn leaves fell off and blew away. They stood in the midst of a vast field of wheat. "Here, Master Nibley, I brought your scythe. Take it. Grab, now lie low," warned Mound Shroud, the druid god of the dead. "Samhain, fall." They fell. For a huge scythe came skimming down out of the sky. With its great razor edge it cut the wind. With its whistling side it sliced clouds. It beheaded trees. It razored along the cheek of the hill. It made a clean shave of wheat. In the air a whole blizzard of wheat fell. And with every whisk, every cut, every scythe, the sky was aswarm with cries and shrieks and screams. The scythe hissed up. The boys cowered. Grunted a large voice.
"Mr. Moundshroud, is that you?"
cried Tom. For towering 40 feet above them in the sky, an immense scythe in his hands, was this cowled figure, its face in midnight fogs. The blade swung down.
Hiss! "Mr. Moundshroud, let us be!"
"Shut up!"
Someone knocked Tom's elbow. Mr. Moundshroud lay on the earth beside him.
"That's not me. That's..."
"Samhain," cried the voice in the fog. "God of the dead, I harvest thus and so." Swoosh! "All those who died this year are here, and for their sins this night are turned to beasts. Swum!"
"Please,"
whimpered Ralph the mummy. The scythe zippered Hackles Nibley's spine, ripping his costume in a long tear, knocking his own small scythe free of his hands.
"Beasts!"
And the harvest wheat flailed up, spun round on the wind, shrieking its souls. All those who had died in the past 12 months rained to earth. And falling, touching, the heads of wheat were turned to asses, chickens, snakes which scurried, cackled, brayed, were turned to dogs and cats and cows that barked, cried, bawled. But all were miniature. All were tiny, small, no bigger than worms, no bigger than toes, no bigger than the sliced-off tip of a nose. By the hundreds and thousands, the wheat heads snowed up in scatters and fell down as spiders which could not shout or beg or weep for mercy, but which, soundless, raced over the grass, poured over the boys. 100 centipedes tiptoed on Ralph's spine. 200 leeches clung to Hackles Nibley's scythe until, with a nightmare gasp, he raved and shook them off. Everywhere fell black widows and tiny boa constrictors.
"For your sins, take that and this,"
bellowed the voice in the whistling sky. The scythe flashed. The wind cut, fell in bright thunders. The wheat churned and gave up 1,000,000 heads. Heads fell. Sinners hit like rocks, and hitting, were turned to frogs and toads and multitudes of scaly warts with legs, and jellyfish which stank in the light.
"I'll be good,"
prayed Tom Skelton.
"Let me live,"
added Henry Hank. All of this said very loudly, for the scythe was making a dreadful roar. It was like an ocean wave falling down out of the sky, cleaning a beach, and running away up to cut more clouds. Even the clouds seemed to be whispering out swift and more fervent prayers for their own fates. "Not me, not me."
"For all the evil you ever did,"
said Samhain. And the scythe cut, and the souls were harvested, and fell in blind newts and awful bedbugs and dreadful cockroaches to scuttle, limp, creep, scrabble. My gosh, he's a bug maker. Flea squasher. Snake grinder outer. Roach transformer. Fly keeper.
No, Samhain, October god, god of the dead.
Samhain stomped a great foot which tread 1,000 bugs in the grass, trampled 10,000 tiny soul beasts in the dust. I think, said Tom, it's time we ran, suggested Ralph, not offhand. Shall we take a vote? The scythe hissed. Samhain boomed.
Vote heck, said Moundshroud.
All jumped up.
You there, thundered the voice above them. Come back.
No, sir, thanks,
said one and then another, and put right foot after left.
I figure,
said Ralph, panting, leaping, tears on his cheeks.
I've been pretty good most of my life. I don't deserve to die.
Ha-hum!
Shouted Samhain. The scythe came in a guillotine which chunked the head off an oak tree and felled a maple. A whole orchard of autumn apples fell into a marble pit somewhere. It sounded like a house full of boys falling downstairs.
I don't think he heard you, Ralph,
said Tom. They dived. They fell among rocks and shrubs. The scythe ricocheted off the stones. Samhain gave such a yell as brought an avalanche down a small hill nearby.
Boy!
Said Ralph, squinched up, balled up, feet against chest, eyes tight.
England is no place to be a sinner.
Even as a final rain, a shower, a downpour of hysterical souls turned beetle, turned flea, turned stink bug, turned daddy long legs, scurried over the boys.
Hey, look! That dog!
A wild dog, mad with terror, raced up the rocks, and its face, its eyes... Something in the eyes.
That couldn't be... Pipkin?
Said everyone.
Pip!
Shouted Tom.
Is this where we meet you? Is...
But whoom! The scythe fell, and yipping with fright, the dog, bowled over, slid down the grass.
Hold on, Pipkin! We know you! We see you! Don't scare off! Don't...
Tom whistled, but the dog... Yarping with Pipkin's own dear, sweet, scared voice was gone. But didn't an echo of his yip come back from the hills?
Meat, 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 meat.
Where? Thought Tom. Criminately, where?
Chapter 13. Samhain, scythe uplifted, gazed all about, happy at his games. He chuckled, a most delicious chuckle, spat fiery spittle on his horny hands, clenched the scythe tighter, swung it up, and froze. For somewhere, someone was singing. Somewhere near the top of a hill, in a small clump of trees, a small bonfire flickered. Men like shadows were gathered there, lifting up their arms and chanting. Samhain listened, his scythe like a great smile in his arms.
O Samhain, god of the dead, hear us. We, the holy druid priests in this grove of trees, the great oaks, plead for the souls of the dead.
Far away, these strange men by their bright fire lifted metal knives, lifted cats and goats in their hands, chanting,
We pray for the souls of those who are turned to beasts. O god of the dead, we sacrifice these beasts, so that you will let free the souls of our loved ones who died this year. The knives flashed. Samhain smiled an even greater smile. The animals shrieked. All around the boys on the earth, the grass, the rocks, the trapped souls, lost in spiders, locked in roaches, put away in fleas and pillbugs and centipedes, gaped and yammered silent yammers and twitched and roiled. Tom winced. He thought he heard a million small, oh, very microscopic, bleats of pain and release from around him where the centipedes capered, spiders danced.
Let free, let be,
prayed the druids on the hill. The fire blazed.
A sea wind roared over the meadows, brushed the rocks, touched at the spiders, rolled the pill bugs, tumbled the roaches. The tiny spiders, insects, the miniature dogs and cows fluffed away like a million snowflakes. The tiny souls trapped in insect bodies dissolved. Released, with a vast cavern whisper, they whistled up the sky.
"To heaven," cried the druid priests. "Oh, free, go."
They flew. They vanished in the air with a great sigh of thanks and much gratitude. Solon, god of the dead, shrugged and let them go. Then, just as suddenly, he stiffened, as did the hidden boys and Mr. Mound Shroud crouched in the rocks. Through a valley and across the hill ran an army of Roman soldiers, a troop on the double. Their leader ran before them, shouting,
"Soldiers of Rome, destroy the pagans, destroy the unholy religion. Suetonius so orders. For Suetonius."
Sawin in the sky raised his scythe. Too late. The soldiers slammed swords and axes into the bases of the holy druid oaks. Sawin shrieked in pain as if the axes had chopped his knees. The holy trees groaned, whistled, and, with a final chop, thundered to earth. Sawin trembled in the high air. The druid priests fleeing stopped and shuddered. Trees fell. The priests, chopped at the ankles, the knees, fell. They were blown over like oaks in a hurricane.
"No,"
roared Sawin in the high air.
"But yes," cried the Romans. "Now."
The soldiers gave a final, mighty blow, and Sawin, god of the dead, torn at his roots, chopped at his ankles, began to fall. The boys, staring up, leaped out of the way, for it was like a giant forest falling all in one fall. They were shadowed by his midnight descent. The thunder of his death came before him. He was the greatest tree in all existence ever, the tallest oak ever to plummet down and die. Down he came through the wild air, screaming, flailing to hold himself up. Sawin hit the earth. He dropped with a roar that shook the bones of the hills and snuffed the holy fires. And with Sawin cut and down and dead, the last of the druid oaks fell with him like wheat cut with a final scythe. His own huge scythe, a vast smile lost in the fields, dissolved into a puddle of silver and sank into the grass. Silence. A smoldering of fires. A blowing of leaves. Instantly the sun went down. The druid priests bled in the grass as the boys watched, and the Roman captain prowled the dead fires, kicking the holy ashes. "Here we shall build our temples to our gods." The soldiers lit new fires and burned incense before golden idols which they set in place. But no sooner lit than a star shone in the east. On far desert sands, to camel bells, three wise men moved. The Roman soldiers lifted their bronze shields against the glare of the star in the sky, but their shields melted. The Roman idols melted and became shapes of Mary and her son. The soldiers' armor melted, dripped, changed. They were dressed now in the garments of priests who sang Latin before yet newer altars, even as Mound Shroud, crouched, squinting, weighed the scene and whispered it to his small masked friends.
"Aye, boys, see? Gods following gods. The Romans cut the druids, their oaks, their god of the dead, bang, down, and put in their own gods, eh? Now the Christians run and cut the Romans down. New altars, boys, new incense, new names."
The wind blew the altar candles out. In darkness, Tom cried out. The earth shuddered and spun. Rain drenched them.
"What's happening, Mr. Mound Shroud? Where are we?"
Mound Shroud struck a flinty thumb into fire and held it up.
"Why, bless me, boys, it's the Dark Ages. The longest, darkest night ever. Christ long since come and gone in the world, and..."
"Where's Pipkin?" "Here,"
cried a voice from the black sky.
"I think I'm on a broom,
It's taking me away.
Hey, me too,
said Ralph, and then JJ, and then Hackles Nibbly and Wally Bab and all the rest. There was a huge whisper like a gigantic cat stroking its whiskers in the dark.
Brooms, muttered Mound Shroud. The gathering of the brooms. The October Broom Festival. The annual migration.
To where?
Asked Tom, calling up, for everyone was making traffic on the air now in whisking shrieks.
The broom works, of course.
Help! I'm flying!
Said Henry Hank.
Whisk!
A broom whistled him away. A great brambly cat flashed by Tom's cheek. He felt a wooden pole between his legs jump up.
Hang on, said Mound Shroud. When attacked by a broom, only one thing to do, hold tight.
I'm holding,
cried Tom and flew away. Chapter 14. The sky was swept clean with brooms. The sky was yelled clean by boys occupying at least 8 of those brooms at once. And what with changing their cries of fear to cries of delight, the boys almost forgot to look or listen for Pipkin, similarly sailed off among island clouds.
This way,
announced Pipkin.
As quick as we can,
said Tom Skelton.
But Pip, it's awful hard to ride a broomstick, I find.
Funny you say that,
said Henry Hank.
I agree.
Everyone agreed, falling off, hanging on, climbing back. There was now such a hustle of brooms as left no room for clouds, and none for mists, and certainly none for fog or buoys. There was an immense traffic jam of brooms, as if all Earth's forests gave up their branches in one boom and fling, and scouring autumn fields, cut clean and throttled tight such cereal grains as made good sweepers, thrashers, beaters, then flew up. So here came all the backyard washline prop poles in the world, and here came with them swatches of grass, clumps of weed, brambles of bush to herd the sheep clouds and cleanse the stars and ride the boys. Said boys, each on his own skinny mount, were deluged with beatings and cuffings of flail and wood. They were punished severely for occupying heaven. They took 100 bruises each, 12 cuts, and precisely 49 lumps on their tender skulls.
Hey, I got a bloody nose,
gasped Tom, happily, looking at the red on his fingers.
Shucks,
cried Pipkin, going into a cloud dry and coming out wet.
That's nothing. I got one eye shut, one ear bad, and lost a tooth. Pipkin,
called Tom,
don't keep telling us to meet you and then we don't know where.
Where?
In the air, said Pipkin.
Jeez,
muttered Henry Hank.
There's 2,100,000,99,000,000 acres of air wrapped around the world. Which half acre does Pip mean? I mean,
gasped Pipkin, but a whole bindle of broomsticks banged up in an akimbo dance like a shuttle of cornstalks across his flight, or a farmland fence suddenly come antic and in frenzies. A cloud with a grand fiend face gaped its mouth. It swallowed Pipkin, broom and all, then shut its vapors tight and rumbled with Pipkin indigestion.
Kick your way out, Pipkin! Stomp him in the stomach,
someone suggested. But nothing kicked, and the cloud, satisfied, sailed on forever's bay toward eternity's dawn, ruminating over its delicious, sweet boy dinner.
Meet him in the air,
Tom snorted. Good grief, talk about horrible directions to nowhere.
See even more horrible directions,
said Mound Shroud, sailing by on a broom that looked like a wet and angry cat on the end of a mop.
Would you see witches, boys? Hags, crones, conjure wives, magicians, black magics, demons, devils? There they be, in mobs, in riots, boys. Skin your eyeballs.
And there below, all across Europe, through France and Germany and Spain, on the night roads were indeed clusters and mobs and parades of strange sinners running north, scrambling away from the southern sea.
That's it. Jump. Run. This way to the night. This way to the dark.
Mound Shroud swooped low, shouting over the mobs like a general leading a fine, evil troop.
Quick, hide. Lie low. Wait a few centuries.
Hide out from what? Wondered Tom.
"Here come the Christians!"
yelled voices below on the roads, and that was the answer. Tom blinked and soared and watched, and from all the roads the mobs ran to stand alone on farms, or at crossroads, in harvest fields, in towns. Old men, old women, toothless and raving, yelling to the sky as the brooms swept down.
"Why," said Henry Hank, stunned, "those are witches."
"Dry clean my soul and hang it out to dry if you're not right, boy," agreed Mound Shroud.
"There are witches jumping fires," said J.J.
"And witches stirring cauldrons," said Tom.
"And witches drawing symbols in farmyard dust," said Ralph. "Are they real? I mean, I always thought..."
"Real?"
Mound Shroud, insulted, almost fell from his bramblecat broom.
"Ye little gods and fishes, lad, every town has its resident witch. Every town hides some old Greek pagan priest, some Roman worshipper of tiny gods who ran up the roads, hid in culverts, sank in caves to escape the Christians. In every tiny village, boy, in every scrubby farm, the old religions hide out. You saw the druids cut and chopped, eh? They hid from the Romans. And now the Romans, who fed Christians to lions, run themselves to hide. So all the little lollygagging cults, all flavors and types, scramble to survive. See how they run, boys."
And it was true. Fires burned all over Europe. At every crossroad and by every haystack, dark forms jumped in cats across flames. Cauldrons bubbled. Old hags cursed. Dogs frolicked red-hot coals.
"Witches, witches everywhere," said Tom, amazed. "I never knew there were so many."
"Mobs and multitudes, Tom. Europe was flooded to the dikes. Witches underfoot, under bed, in the cellars and high attics."
"Boy, oh boy," said Henry Hank,
proud in his witch costume.
"Real witches. Could they talk to the dead?"
"No,"
said Mound Shroud.
"Jump up devils?"
"No."
"Keep demons in door hinges and squeal them out at midnight?"
"No."
"Ride broomsticks?"
"Nope."
"Put sneezing spells on people?"
"Sorry."
"Kill folks by sticking pins in dolls?"
"No."
"Well, heck, what could they do?"
"Nothing."
"Nothing?"
cried all the boys, affronted.
"Oh, they thought they could, boys."
Mound Shroud led the team down on their brooms over the farms where witches dropped frogs in cauldrons and stomped toads and snuffed mummy dust and cavorted in cackles.
But stop and think. What does the word witch truly mean?
"Why,"
said Tom, and was stymied.
"Wits," said Mound Shroud. "Intelligence, that's all it means. Knowledge. So any man or woman with half a brain and with inclinations toward learning had his wits about him, eh? And so anyone too smart who didn't watch out was called..."
"A witch,"
said everyone.
"And some of the smart ones, the ones with wits, pretended at magic or dreamed themselves with ghosts and dead shufflers and ambling mummies, and if enemies dropped dead by coincidence, they took credit for it. They liked to believe they had power, but they had none, boys, none. Sad and sorry, 'tis true. But listen, there beyond the hill, that's where the brooms come from. That's where they go."
The boys listened and heard.
"The broom works makes, the broom that looms, on sky in gloom and rising of the moon, that broom which, groom to which, flies high on harvestings of storm-wind grass, with shriek and sigh to motion it, in ocean seas of cloud, now soft, now loud."
Below, at full tilt, a witch-broom factory was filled with commotions, poles being cut and bound with broom-brushes which, no sooner tied, took off up chimneys in flights of spark. On rooftops, hags leaped on to ride the stars. Or so it seemed,
as the boys watched and voices sang. Did witches feel the night wind in their bed, and reel and dance with devils and the dead?
No.
But that is what they bragged and claimed and said, until whole continents, hell-bent, named witches of the innocent, and did conspire to burn old women, babes, and virgins in a fire. Mobs raved through villages and farms with torches, cursing. Bonfires flared from the English Channel to the Mediterranean shore. Through all of Germany and France, 10,000 so-called evil witches hung to kick their final antic dance. No village but what shared a dread uproar, as each side named the other for a devil's pig, old Satan's sow, the demon's maddened boar. Wild pigs, with witches glued to their backs, trotted roof tiles, flinting sparks, snorting steams. All Europe was a cloud of witches' smoke, their judges often bound and burnt with them for what? A joke. Until all men are spoiled with guilt, all sin, all lie. So what to do? Why, everyone must die. Smoke churned the sky. At every crossroads, witches hung. Crows gathered in a feathered darkness. The boys hung from their brooms in the sky, eyes popped, mouths wide.
Anyone want to be a witch? Asked Mound Shroud at last.
Said Henry Hank, shivering in his witch's rags.
Not me.
No fun, eh, boy?
No fun. The brooms flew them off through chars and smokes. They landed on an empty street in an open place, in Paris. Their brooms fell over, dead. Chapter 15.
Well now, boys, what should we do to scare the scarers, frighten the frighteners, shiver the shiverers, called Mound Shroud inside a cloud. What's bigger than demons and witches?
Bigger gods? Bigger witches? Bigger churches?
Guessed Tom Skelton.
Bless you, Tom, right. An idea gets big, yes? A religion gets big. How? With buildings large enough to cast shadows across an entire land. Build buildings you can see for 100 miles. Build one so tall and famous it has a hunchback in it ringing bells. So now, boys, help me build it brick by brick, flying buttress by flying buttress. Let's build.
Notre Dame!
Shouted 8 boys.
And all the more reason to build Notre Dame because, said Mound Shroud, listen.
Bong. A bell tolled in the sky. Bong.
Help.
Whispered a voice when the sound had died. Bong. The boys looked and saw a kind of scaffolding reared up in half a belfry keep upon the moon. At the very top hung a huge bronze bell that was tolling now, and from inside that bell, with every crash and bang and gong, this small voice shouted,
"Help!"
The boys looked at Mound Shroud. Their eyes blazed a question.
Pipkin?
Meet me in the air, thought Tom.
And there he is!
There, hung upside down over Paris, his head for a knocker, was Pipkin in a bell, or the shadow, ghost, or lost spirit of Pipkin anyway, which is to say there was a bell, and when it sounded the hour, why, that sound was made by a flesh-and-blood clapper which knocked the rim. Pipkin's head banged the bell. Bong. And again, bong.
Knock his brains out,
gasped Henry Hank.
Help,
called Pipkin, a shadow in the bell, a ghost chained upside down to strike the quarters and the hours.
Fly,
cried the boys to their brooms, but their brooms lay dead on the Paris stones.
No life in them, mourned Mound Shroud. Juice, sap, and fire all gone.
Well, now.
He rubbed his chin to sparks. How do we get up to help Pipkin with no brooms?
You fly, Mr. Mounshroud?
Ah, no, that's not the ticket. You must save him, always and forever, again and again, this night, until one grand salvation. Wait. Ah, inspiration. We were going to build Notre Dame, correct? Well then, let us by all means build it, there, and climb our way up to Hard Scald, knock the bell, sound the hour, Pipkin. Up it, lads, climb those stairs.
What stairs?
These, here, here, and here.
Bricks fell in place. The boys leaped. And as they put a foot up, out, and down, a stair came under it, one stone at a time.
Bong, said the bell.
Help,
said Pipkin. Feet galloping empty air came down to tap, rustle, clomp on. A step, another step. And yet another, and another, climbing empty space.
Help,
said Pipkin. Bong. Again went the hollow bell. So they ran on emptiness, with Mounshroud prodding, shoving after. They ran on pure windy light, only to have bricks and stones and mortar shuffle like cards, deal themselves solid, take form beneath their toes and heels. It was like racing up through a cake that built itself layer on stone layer, and the wild bell and sad Pipkin shouting and pleading them on.
Our shadow! There it is!
Said Tom. And indeed, the shadow of this cathedral, this splendid Notre Dame, was tossed by moonlight all across France and half of Europe.
Up, boys, up! No pause, no rest! Run! Bong!
They ran. They began to fall with each step. But again and again and again, steps came in place and saved them and ran them taller so the shadow of the spires loomed tall across rivers and fields to snuff the last witch fires at crossroads. Crones, hags, wise men, demon lovers, 1,000 miles off, snuffed like candles, whiffed to smoke. Wailed and sank to hide as the church leaned, tilted across the heavens.
So even as the Romans cut down druid trees and chopped their god of the dead to fall, we now, with this church, boys, cast such a shadow as knocks all witches off their stilts and puts seedy sorcerers and trite magicians to heel. No more small witch fires, only this great lit candle, Notre Dame, presto!
The boys laughed with delight, for the last step fell in place. They had reached the top, gasping. Notre Dame Cathedral was finished and built.
Bong!
The last soft hour was struck. The great bronze bell shuddered and hung empty. The boys leaned to peer into its cavernous mouth. There was no clapper inside shaped like Pipkin.
Pipkin,
they whispered.
Kin,
echoed the bell in a small echo.
He's here somewhere, up there in the air. Meet him's what he promised, and Pipkin falls back on no promises, said Mounshroud. Look about, boys. Fine handiwork, eh? Centuries of toil done in a fast gallop and sneeze, right? But ah, something beside Pipkin's missing. What? Glance up. Scan round, eh?
The boys peered. They puzzled.
Don't the place look awful plain, boys? Awful untouched and unornamented?
Gargoyles!
Everyone turned to look at Wally Babb, who was dressed as a gargoyle for Halloween. His face fairly beamed with revelation.
Gargoyles! The place has got no gargoyles!
Gargoyles.
Mounshroud uttered and ululated and beautifully ribboned the word with his lizardy tongue.
Gargoyles. Shall we put them on, boys?
How?
Why, I should think we could whistle them in place. Whistle for demons, boys. Whistle for fiends. give a high, great, tootling blow for beasties and ferocious, fanged loomers of the dark.
Wally Babs sucked in a great breath.
Here's mine!
He whistled. All whistled. And the gargoyles? They came running.
Chapter 16. The unemployed of all midnight Europe shivered in their stone sleep and came awake, which is to say that all the old beasts, all the old tales, all the old nightmares, all the old unused demons put by, and witches left in the lurch, quaked at the call, reared at the whistle, trembled at the summons, and in dust devils of propulsion skimmed down the roads, flitted skies, buckshot through shaken trees, forded streams, swam rivers, pierced clouds, and arrived. Which is still to say that all the dead statues and idols and semigods and demigods of Europe, lying like a dreadful snow all about, abandoned, in ruins, gave a blink, and start, and came as salamanders on the road, or bats in skies, or dingoes in the brush. They flew. They galloped. They skittered. To the general excitement and amazement and much babbling shout from the fringe of boys leaning out, Mound Shroud leaning with them as the mobs of strange beasts came from north, south, east, west, to panic at the gates and wait for whistles.
"Shall we drop white-hot boiling lead down on them?"
The boys saw Mound Shroud's smile.
"Heck no," said Tom. "Hunchback already did that years ago."
"Well, then, no burning lava. So shall we whistle them up?"
They all whistled, and, obedient to summons, the mobs, the flocks, the prides, the crush, the collection, the raving flux of monsters, beasts, vices rampant, virtues gone sour, discarded saints, misguided prides, hollow pomps oozed, slid, suckered, pelted, ran bold and right up the sides of Notre Dame. In a flood tide of nightmare, in a tidal wave of outcry and shamble, they inundated the cathedral to crust themselves on every pinion and upthrust stone. So here ran pigs, and there climbed Satan's goats, and yet another wall knew devils, which recarved themselves along the way, dropped horns and grew new ones, shaved beards to sprout tendril earthworm mustaches. Sometimes a swarm of only masks and faces scuttled up the walls and took the buttress heights, carried by an army of crayfish and wobbly crotchety lobsters. Here came the heads of gorillas full of sin and teeth. There came men's heads with sausages in their mouths. Beyond danced the mask of a fool upheld by a spider that knew ballet. So much was going on that Tom said,
"My gosh, so much is going on!"
"And more to come there," said Mound Shroud.
For now that Notre Dame was infested with various beasts and spidering leers and gloms and masks, why, here came dragons chasing children and whales swallowing Jonahs and chariots chock full of skulls and bones, acrobats and tumblers yanked out of shape by demi-demons, limped and fell in strange postures to freeze on the roof, all accompanied by pigs with harps and sows with piccolos and dogs playing bagpipes, so the music itself helped charm and pull new mobs of grotesques up the walls to be trapped and caught forever in sockets of stone. Here an ape plucked a lyre. There floundered a woman with a fish's tail. Now a sphinx flew out of the night, shed its wings and became woman and lion half and half, settled to snooze away the centuries in the shadow and sound of high bells.
"Why, what are those?"
cried Tom. Mound Shroud, leaning over, gave a snort.
"Why, those are sins, boys, and nondescripts. There crawls the worm of conscience."
They looked to see it crawl. It crawled very fine.
"Now," whispered Mound Shroud softly, "settle, slumber, sleep."
And the flocks of strange creatures turned about three times like evil dogs and lay down. All beasts took root. All grimaces froze to stone. All cries faded. The moon shadowed and lit the gargoyles of Notre Dame.
Does it make sense, Tom?
Sure. All the old gods, all the old dreams, all the old nightmares, all the old ideas with nothing to do, out of work. We gave them work. We called them here.
And here they will remain for centuries, right?
Right.
They looked down over the rim. There was a mob of beasts on the east battlement, a crowd of sins on the west, a surge of nightmares on the south, and a fine scuttle of unnamed vices and ill-kept virtues to the north.
I,
said Tom, proud of this night's work,
wouldn't mind living here.
The wind crooned in the mouths of the beasts. Their fangs hissed and whistled.
Much thanks.